This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
I didn't tell you guys this. I bought something over the over New Year's.
What'd you buy?
So you both were in my setup last week, or last time we did the show, and you got to see how amazing it was with the two TVs and the VCR and all of that. What do you think could make that better?
A beanbag chair. Like one of those like vinyl on the outside beanbag chairs. They get like way too cold in the winter and way too hot in the summer. That one.
Not beanbag filled, just air filled.
Ooh.
Old air pink, filled? Like teal colored plastic inflatable furniture.
My furniture is comfortable already. I don't need more furniture.
Is it a media thing?
It is a media thing.
Record player?
No. I have one of those upstairs.
An 8-track player?
No.
Ooh, that's a good Allen guess.
I bought a projector.
Did you now?
Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible.
I have a projector. I got this a projector stand before that, which is a whole story that I'll tell you guys off the air. But I kept saying projector to my wife enough that I was getting ads on TikTok for projectors left and right. So I bought a projector with a screen for a decent price. So we'll see how it turns out.
So here's the part where Alan tells us he's not actually in his basement. This is the projection. He's actually on vacation somewhere.
I'm a hologram.
Alan, where are you?
I am next door, Devin. I'm right down the hall in a different flat.
27 pressing lane. Oh no.
Yeah.
It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around and finally found the somebody who.
Hey everybody, welcome to You Have to Watch This podcast. I'm Alan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Devin.
And each week on You Have to Watch This podcast, we pick a film that one of us, at least one of us, has never seen before. This week is my pick, and I picked the Rob Reiner film, When Harry Met Sally, starring Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. A film that Devin and Ryan had not seen, correct?
Correct.
Partly, yes.
Partly, okay.
I've seen the scene. Like, I've seen the scene everyone's seen.
Yeah, everyone's seen the scene. So we'll get into that shortly, but before we do, we like to start off the show by catching up on things that we've watched in pop culture, and we have a lot to get through for this segment because I think we each have two things that we want to talk about. But before we get into Harry Met Sally, we're going to talk about the big sci-fi release over on Netflix. All spoiler free, we're going to talk a bit about Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon. Okay, that's all I've got to say about Rebel
Moon.
That's
it. We're good. Yeah. No more guys.
It was okay. So this is This was Zack Snyder's potential Star Wars film. It's pretty much the Seven Samurai in space, or as a lot of people called it in Ryan's comments, Bug's Life in space.
I mean, that's seriously what it was. I remember watching it, and I said out loud to Kristen, "Like, this is Bug's Life." Like, as soon as they walked into the bar, like yeah. same premise.
Well, I mean, so is. Bug's Life is just Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Still. Yeah.
It was okay.
I have a question for you guys. Name any one character's name.
I only saw it once, so I can't do that.
Yeah, me too.
I couldn't do that to a movie I liked, though.
Well, like, even when you watch Star Wars, you're like, Han Solo. Like, that's a catchy name. Like, with this one, it's like the shirtless one or, like, the one with the swords.
Or the guy who played Cyborg and then nothing else.
Right. I don't know. I didn't like this. I know that there's an extended version coming out because, of course, there is. I really don't want to watch it, guys. Don't make me do it. I will, but don't make me do it.
That just makes me mad at the fact that, like, oh, look, here's what the release. And, oh, no, there's another one coming out that's longer. Like, this premiered on Netflix. Netflix pretty much let him do whatever he wanted. Why not just release the longer one first and let that be the actual thing? Like, do we have to do this again?
Yeah,
do we have to do this again?
I don't get that either. So
But I am invested enough in it to watch the second one because I'm like, eh, but I still want to see where it's going because it does have some elements that I do
horny
like.
Robot.
What?
Horny robot. I want more of the robot. I want more,
yeah,
I want more
of
the robot.
Anthony, yeah. I want more of that actor.
You can't put Anthony Hopkins in a thing and then not use him. What is this? The Thor movies? Like, come on. Like,
that was my biggest disappointment. Like, I really like him. And he was only in it for, what, like a total of 3 minutes? So he better be in it a lot in the next one. Because I really want to know how he got the crown of weeds.
All right, moving on. Ryan, you watched another thing on Netflix that you told us in private that you were having trouble getting through. You watched Leave the World Behind.
Did you actually finish it?
You never finished it?
I did.
It? Okay, yes, who, okay you, I did. You picked that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Devin, you go. Sorry.
So I picked the thing that everyone's boomer parent is talking about right now. Guys, I watched Leave the World Behind. It's fine. I totally get why people would be like weird about this movie. I thought it was good. I went into it with zero expectations and zero cultural anything behind it. I didn't know what kind of conspiracies would pop out afterwards. I didn't know what kind of social discourse it would cause. It almost feels like it's built to have... It almost feels like it's like, paste your political opinion here, and then the movie kind of goes however you want it to go based on what your political opinion is.
Okay.
Which is great.
Which it feels like, if you guys ever seen that South Park episode where the kids write a book called The Pooh That Took a Pee?
Oh, yeah.
And every political side of it's like, well, this is the most left-leaning book I've ever read. And they're like, well, I don't know what book you read. This is the most conservative book I've ever read. It's what this movie is. It's everyone's political opinion. Put yours there. You're going to love it. I thought it was good. I liked it. We'll probably do it on the podcast just because I like making Ryan suffer.
Put your conspiracy theory here.
Yes.
Like, that's pretty
much
what the movie is.
It is exactly what the movie is. And you know what?
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, it's based off a book. My sister-in-law has read the book. She liked it up until the ending. That's as much as she told me and as much as I wanted to ask about it.
I liked the ending.
Because I didn't want to know. But my problem is that the trailer and the first 3 minutes of the movie gives me nothing gives me absolutely nothing to look forward to until the very end.
I don't know. All right. It's fair.
We'll have to talk about it on the show eventually.
We will.
Yeah,
I feel like I feel like we can't say much more without diving into spoilers.
No, we can't.
I watched a movie over on Hulu that I wanted to see in theaters but didn't get around. Oh, nope. Devin, you also saw Wonka. I forgot I had this in here.
Did you not see Wonka too?
I did see Wonka.
We saw Wonka.
We saw Wonka. Not together. I liked it. No. It was fun.
Yeah. Okay, so I got a little mad at first when I first like started watching it because it's tonally very different from any other Willy Wonka movie in existence.
Good.
But then the more I leaned into it, the more I'm like, no, I want a Wonka movie like this. Like, they got the tone really, really right. I loved it.
I rewatched Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory the other night because I've had pure imagination stuck in my head since I saw Wonka.
As you should.
And there's enough of the Gene Wilder Willy Wonka in Timothy Chalamet's performance, but I wanted more. Like, there are little moments that you can see Gene Wilder coming through, like a little bit of the craziness, a few of the mannerisms. Watching Willy Wonka, it feels like he's like in that movie, it's all just a con. Like a lot of the stuff that he did in Wonka was.
Yeah.
Because at the end, like, that's when you see the Willy Wonka that you know from the new one. Like, he's pure and like excited for Charlie. Don't see any of the Johnny Depp.
I was going to ask Wonka if you saw any of him.
No. And that's fine. I enjoyed it. The music was interesting.
Like, I like it.
I like some songs. I don't know how I feel about the lyrics. There's chocolate and then there's chocolate.
Oh, no, I liked it. It sounds so, like, snooty, right? Like, there's chocolate, and then there's chocolate, my boy. Like, I don't know, it's that. I don't know, I liked it.
Overall, the film was good. Like, from the filmmakers of Paddington 2, it's exactly what I wanted it to be.
I'm gonna put my flag down. This might be my favorite Wonka movie.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
In the chat, Romano versus the game says, "Did not know there were going to be songs. What a surprise! They didn't. Yeah. They didn't market it as a musical at all.
No.
And that's all it is. It's a straight up musical.
Yeah, and like maybe like 3 seconds into the trailer, they're making what looks like it could be a chorus line, mm-hmm. but they don't like give you that it's songs at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love that the director who has worked on Paddington, I'm really curious if he worked on Downton Abbey, because there's just so many people from Downton Abbey that show up in his movies.
Is there really?
Yeah, the accountant was one of the butlers at Downton Abbey.
That's fun.
So one of the things I watched that I was trying to talk about before, I watched The Creator on Hulu.
tell me.
It's going to be one of my next picks for the show. Might be my favorite movie of 2023.
Wow.
Because it does everything that I like about sci-fi right. It's lower budget, cheaper cameras, but it's still a compelling story and it looks fantastic.
It looked like what I wanted Rebel Moon to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very similar in concepts, very different in execution.
Good.
Because good. You can tell everything in Rebel Moon that was shot on green screen. This one's a little bit more difficult. And this is from Gareth Edwards, who was the director of Rogue One and Godzilla. That makes it sound like it was a Rogue One versus Godzilla movie. No. The Star Ooh. Wars Rogue One. Yeah.
I'd be all right with that.
Godzilla Rogue One. It's a sequel to Minus One. Yes. but yeah, this is going to be coming up soon on my picks for the show because I liked it that much.
That's awesome.
And then Devin, you also watched all of the Hunger Games movies.
And
I have one question. Yeah. Why?
So
I was actually thinking the same thing.
So that was what we did on Christmas. Actually, we did it Christmas/Boxing Day. That was what we had done. And we had just come off of Rebel Moon. And I got to tell you guys, like the mixture of like watching Rebel Moon and then watching The Hunger Games is like eating literal garbage and then going to McDonald's. It's so good. Like the movies were really good. I really enjoyed all of The Hunger Games movies. I didn't like the last one so much, I think. I'm still very firmly Team Gale. After watching all of them, I still think Pete is a shit. And I'm going to make all of us watch all of these movies at some point so we can discuss it. Because you guys all haven't. I think Ryan has seen all of them based on his reactions, right?
I've seen the first one.
Oh, you have a whole world to go.
I've seen the first two.
Okay, got it.
And that was like back when they first came out, so it's been years.
Got it.
But yeah, I'm down for a binge episode where we watch all of these.
Heck yeah, man.
Because remember, we have our Oscar bet coming up here soon.
We do have our Oscar bet.
I think they just announced when nominations are going up. So we have 20 days. 20 days to start watching things that are going to be nominated for Oscars and then go from there.
Good.
Okay. The last thing that I have. Oh, no. Ryan, you had something else. I need to start writing everything down because I pull it all and then I forget. Ryan, you watched Final Destination 6?
Final
Destination?
I just pulled a poster of one that didn't exist because I wanted to tell you guys. I had the Final Destinations. Would you stop? The Final Destination movies were my biggest fear. Because they hit the actual anxiety that I have of, like, just random crap happening to you. Of, like, different things. So I saw the first one when it first came out. And it literally, like, almost made me have a panic attack. Almost. And I was like, I'm done with these movies. Like, I get that they can get kind of silly, but these deaths are too, like, too accidentally possible for me to, like, enjoy these storylines. So Kristen decided to binge them over between, you know, the Christmas New Year's break. And I walked in on three. And I'm like, this is cartoonish violence. Like, this is cartoonish. Like, these people don't have bones. They're water balloons. They just pop. And I was laughing through it. And she's like, you haven't seen these. And I explained the whole thing. And she goes, we need to watch these. And I'm like, just not the first one. And she goes, yeah, the first one's a bit more serious than the rest of them. So I watched 2 through 5. I love these movies. So I went from, like, absolutely staying away from these things, not wanting to deal with them because I thought they would trigger, like, my actual anxiety. And I was laughing through them because the deaths are ridiculous and these people are just made of, like, blood balloons and they just pop whenever things happen. So I just wanted to get that out there that, like, I actually enjoy, like, movies that I considered to be, like, the series I would never touch.
That's cool. I mean, you and I had very different binges this break than it looks like.
Yeah, so I just wanted to get that out there. And sixes might be happening. I have no idea. I just wanted to throw a poster up there that would, like, fill the spot without having it be one movie.
Yeah, nice. You guys both binge series. I started a binge not on a series, but on a person. Because I watched the documentary Albert Brooks Defending My Life, which is a documentary about comedian, screenwriter, director, and actor Albert Brooks. Okay. It's half of it's a documentary about his career and starting off with, like, doing comedy on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. The other half of it is just what him and director Rob Reiner called My Dinner with Albert. It's just the two of them in a restaurant talking about about his life. And they go through, like, all of his career and, like, pretty fascinating stuff. Like, did you know Albert Brooks was born Albert Einstein? Like, that's his his name. they talk about that. I learned about this from Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend because they were both on there. And Devin, I think it's a fantastic episode that you'll love.
I need to listen to it.
But the biggest thing that I took from this documentary was I need to watch more Albert Brooks movies. So I started watching them. I'm going to go through them all, but I watched Lost in America, which, Devin, how much Albert Brooks do you know?
I Googled his name. I see that he's involved.
He's the dad in Finding Nemo. He's the dad of Finding Nemo. He's the villain in the Simpsons movie.
He's in Drive.
He's the villain in Drive.
He's Jacob the Tiger in Dr. Dolittle.
Yeah.
No, I don't know anything about him.
Okay. These films are going to be right up your alley. His sense of humor is
good.
Right up. Like, you're going to love it. Ryan, I think you'll like it to a point.
Suffering through. Gotcha.
But the reason I'm leading off, ending the segment with this is the documentary is directed by Rob Reiner, who also directed this week's film, When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, hey.
Look, segues.
Look at you.
I'm talking about what year was it? 1989 film When Harry Met Sally, starring Billy Crystal, Meg Ryan, Carrie Fisher, and Bruno Kirby. This is directed by Rob Reiner, as we mentioned, and written by Nora Ephron. Devin, you've watched another Nora Ephron film on this podcast. Do you know which one it was?
Is it You've Got Mail?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Nailed it.
In Harry Met Sally, Harry and Sally have known each other for years and are very good friends, but they fear sex would ruin the friendship. That's a horrible description for this
That's
movie.
A really bad description.
That's a really bad
that
is very bad.
Blah. Was that IMDb?
That was the first description on IMDb.
Sally goes from hating Harry to eventually marrying him.
That's every rom-com. Don't do that either.
Pretty
not
much
every rom-com.
Like, the last sentence of this description is probably the best one. Can a man and woman be friends without sex getting in the way?
Oh, I want to come back to this then.
Yeah, we will.
Can we?
Yeah, no, we will. we will. To. Like, we'll we'll circle back to that. But like the rest of the descriptions are very long winded. so I'm not going to read those, but so this is a film that I have seen several times before. I always liked You've Got Mail. So I came to this one later. I've always liked Billy Crystal. This is one of the big three rom-coms with Meg Ryan that I've seen. I've really liked the sense of humor of this, the style, the interludes with the couples talking about how they met and their stories really, is a nice device that I've seen used in other things like Ted Lasso, which is always fun to come back to. But, yeah, I like this movie enough that I bought a poster for it. Not because I knew we were going to do it for the podcast and wanted it behind me. Definitely not why I bought it, but yeah, I enjoy this movie. I think the sense of humor is great. I love the chemistry between Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan, even though I'm used to the chemistry between Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, which we'll talk about a bit later.
We'll have to.
But I'm curious, Ryan, you said you have seen parts of this before, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. No. I saw the first 20 minutes and turned it off. I mean, I saw the first 20 minutes and turned it off. That was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why?
Why'd you turn it off?
I figured that the whole movie was based around one topic. And I was like, if this is going to be an hour and a half of this, then this is going to be beaten to death by the first hour. And I don't care to watch any more of it.
Okay.
Was the one topic that can a man and woman be friends?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, kinda it is.
Well, we're going to talk about that as we get into more detail about how I progress through watching this.
Okay.
Oh, you have a journey. I love a journey for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
Devin, what did you think of When Harry Met Sally?
So all I had seen up until this point, obviously, is just the scene. And I had, I do the Devin thing, right? Where I have a whole movie in my head because I've seen a scene and I basically know what the movie is. I did this with RoboCop, I did Starship Troopers. Mm-hmm. I've also done this with When Harry Met Sally. The movie I made in my head is that Harry is a busy businessman with too much time, and Sally is this wild, free-spirited lady who's willing to do anything in public, and she teaches him to loosen up. He teaches her to become more rigid, and together they have this loving relationship. That was the movie I built in my head.
So you thought this was a Hallmark movie?
Yeah, basically. I mean, look, up until when you guys had me watch more romance or rom-com movies, basically every rom-com movie was a Hallmark movie in my head. So this was very consistent for what I thought these plots were. But imagine my surprise when the movie certainly wasn't that. And when it opened on an old couple talking about how they met. And I mean, I'm going to be honest, I really liked this movie. It had my attention the whole time. There's so much good about this movie. And I'm really, really, really excited to dig into things I liked, but then also the things I don't like, because there's really one really big thing I did not like about this movie, but also kind of loved.
Is it something we should start off on?
Yes, it is.
Okay, let's dive into it. What is it?
The second he opened his freaking mouth, I hated Billy Crystal's character. I hated him.
Oh, really?
His whole, like... I can't tell if this is like, these are hilarious jokes in the 90s, guys, or 80s. If he's just 80s, 80, right, since 89. These are hilarious jokes in the 80s, guys, and you're just too 2023 to understand it, Devin. Or if, like, he's just supposed to come off as a shit, like, the whole time. But, like, up until almost the very end when he's eating ice cream on New Year's Eve alone, I, like, do not care about what's happening to him and thinks he deserves it. Like, the whole Helen stuff, I sympathize. I do sympathize with that, how he, like, feels deeply, and there's, like, emotional undercurrent. I like that. But anytime he opens his mouth and he's, like, trying to be quippy or funny, I'm like, gross, gross, stop, gross.
Okay.
Do you guys have that? Like, tell me I'm crazy. Or
I think
tell me that I don't understand old jokes.
He grows on me a little bit faster. I think that first scene when they're in the car and he's like spitting the whatever seeds out the window.
The grape seeds.
Yeah, you're not supposed to like him there.
The
biggest distraction for me in that scene is his hairpiece, because he, like Billy Crystal, it doesn't work. Like college age, like aging him down to be college age is comical in this. Meg Ryan, it kind of works. Like she doesn't really age up, or they don't really have to de-age her at all. But with him, they have to do something with his hair. And it just, like, I don't know why they didn't just put a ball cap on him, because he's Billy Crystal and he loves the Yankees anyway. So just put a ball cap on him. But no, they had to go with that horrible, horrible wig. I think it's intentional that you're not supposed to like him.
Okay.
At first, but then as they become closer, you're supposed to become closer to both of them and appreciate them both more.
Yeah, that and I mean a lot of the stuff that he talks about, and this is one of the reasons why I turned this movie off the first time I tried to watch it a few years ago, is that the things that he's talking about, yeah, they're kind of jokes and we're supposed to kind of like laugh at the ridiculousness of it, you would be surprised how mainstream, with quote-unquote regular guys, those points of views were held by.
So, give me one sec, because I referenced a book.
Oh, getting scholarly on us, Devin.
Oh, no. There was a book called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Yes.
And I think it came out just before this movie. If I
remember that being all over the news and my parents and teachers talking about it.
Yeah, and it really has like that same tone, doesn't it? It's like, men and women can't be friends. They can't. Like, I don't think it's true at all. Like, and I don't like the ethos that this book is pushing, and it seems very of that time.
This is something that I was kind of thinking that we'd be touching on later. But I feel this movie does something that I see a lot. Like, this is a movie that I can point to as an example of a thought and like a point of view that I have that makes it easier to explain.
Okay.
This movie does overall assumptions about just everyone. When everyone's on a scale, this movie kind of tries to make it black and white. And Billy Crystal's character at the beginning is like, either, you know, it's like, no, they just can't, because that part, you know, like sex gets in the way. And when in the reality, and like this movie points at the fact that a lot of people try to make their worldview easy by putting things in either, you know, black or white or binary or just off and on, when in, you know, reality, that's only a segment of the population is like that. Because, I mean, like, you've got people out there who have no drive for that at all.
Yeah.
And they don't fit in that narrative of what he's talking about in this movie. And I, like, this movie is a perfect example of, like, look, do you see all the assumptions that are being made in this? Like, this isn't reality.
Okay, no. So the one thing I will say is I actually really like that you brought that up, because I don't think the movie talks about black and white in that way. And I was worried in the beginning it would. Because if you look at the first couple that they talk to, goes, well, I saw her walk into a diner and I knew it was love. And 2 weeks later, we were married. And then they like talk about men and women can't be friends. And they're setting up this very rigid definition of what a relationship is, and this very rigid definition of how friendship and men and women's relationship should work. But as the movie progresses, Harry and Sally's relationship gets more complex. The relationships between people around them get more complex. And interestingly, so do the cutaways on the couches get more complex. To the point where you're having this guy go, well, I was married to my first wife. What was the name? And then I was cheating on her with the second wife. And I was at it with the third wife. And that's when I met her again. Like, that's like about as complex as it gets. And I really like that the movie itself builds the complexity in relationships as it goes on and doesn't stay on that black and white thing, except for maybe how the movie ends, which we'll have to talk about in a minute.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like the that's a good point about the interludes. Like, I didn't like I've watched it several times. I've never picked up on how much more complex they get as they go along, because, and it helps the movie go along, because those act as like little act breaks to split the movie up.
I was thinking about this movie in terms of kind of two things, in terms of like, it, what does it have to say, which is what we're touching on now. And then as a romance movie, like how, not even like as individual characters, but like my favorite part of this movie is, and this is something that I didn't grasp until recently, so bear with me, guys, the chemistry. I actually really love the chemistry between these two. And like, I'm not one person that looks at, like, I won't ever look at like Billy Crystal and go, that man is a romantic lead in any movie at all. But I'll look at like Meg Ryan and go, yeah, she should be the romantic lead in every movie. And like, if you were to tell me these two are like the couple, I wouldn't believe you until you see them on screen together. And it really does jump off at you. Like, I had these moments where I was like, they're doing these little looks or these like little glances, or like Meg Ryan at one point is so good at portraying her character that like she looks like she's annoyed and dancing at the same time, which is like something I don't know that I could do in real life, let alone in front of a camera. But like the chemistry that these two have makes that journey that these two are on so believable for me, I think.
Yeah.
Did you guys have that too? Or
with everyone except for Billy Crystal.
You didn't like him?
I just think it's his acting style. I was trying to think of it today as a prime example. The lowest that he's at is when he's at the Giants game talking to his friend about his wife moving out. That's yeah. like the lowest his character gets. And then the happiest he gets when at the end, when he's going through that speech that I've heard before on audio tracks that like bands have used to like intro a song or something. I didn't realize that was from this until that scene. And to be honest, his range is not very wide in this for me. Like, I guess it's just a me thing. Mm. Or because, like, I feel like there are scenes, in particular, after he's after the scene where he blows up at his friends because he just saw Helen. And he's outside of their house after helping them move in. I almost feel like he's a stand-up comedian struggling to act. There are times when I feel like that's how he's coming across to me.
Interesting.
And so, like, I love Meg Ryan in this. I love Carrie Fisher in this. I love that guy that he was friends with the mustache. Like,
Bruno
he,
Kirby.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
Bruno Kirby.
There, yeah. It's just, I love Billy Crystal's acting. I mean, his voice acting. I love his writing. I find him to be a very funny person. This is the first time I think I've legitimately watched a whole movie with him acting in it that I can think of.
I wonder if part of it is because Billy Crystal, looking at his IMDb, there's a lot of things where he's a lot more zany. Like, the Billy yeah. Crystal in this is a lot different than the Billy Crystal in City Slickers 2, The Legend of Curly's Gold.
I need to rewatch those because I used to love those movies when I was a kid. Yeah. I haven't seen them since I was like 8.
But those, like that Billy Crystal is chaotic, and that's when he's like, analyze this. You have him playing the psychiatrist to a mobster played by Robert De Niro, and that's a whole different Billy Crystal than what you get here. Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc. Like, it's a, yeah. like the one that doesn't really fit the pattern is Harry. Like, it is a different character for him, and it's a little bit more dramatic, but I think there are moments of his sense of humor in this. Like when he's singing the karaoke at Sharper Image, which is such a weird sentence in 2024. But there are moments of it. And I'm looking at his IMDb and I'm like, he hasn't been in much lately. He's done a lot of Broadway and some, like the thing I know Billy Crystal from the most outside of this and Silly Slickers is hosting the Oscars. Like,
wow.
He's a comedian's comedian. He like the best thing about him hosting the Oscars is he always sings the song about all of the movies that got nominated that year. And he does the montages where he's in every movie. Like, he's like, I miss him hosting the Oscars. I wish he would do it again. But do you guys, like, there was a whole debate last year about, is Martin Short funny? Do you guys, like, as in all, as a whole, do you think Billy Crystal is funny? Like, do you like Billy Crystal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's, I think that might have been another reason why I turned this movie off a few years ago, was just like, I knew that it was a rom-com, but I wasn't expecting that.
Do you know what I think it was? You guys prepared me for this. I don't think you guys realized you did this. You prepared me for this when you had me watch The Holiday, and Jack Black couldn't be Jack Black. Jack Black had to be romantic lead Jack Black, and they gave him like one scene to be zany. So I was ready. I was like, he won't be the Billy Crystal that I know and love, and I have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
So thank you.
So in the chat, friend of the show, Chad asks, what about when he blows up after seeing Helen? I think that's like that's the most Billy Crystal you get in this movie, is when he like does that whole rant in Carrie Fisher and Bruno Kirby's apartment, where he's just like going off on seeing her and like just love in general. And like how it's all going to play out. Like that's peak Billy Crystal in this. Like, he's very subdued the rest of the film. But that's when he gets to show his crystal.
And
well done.
And even then he was kind of, I felt like he was pulling back a little bit for the sake of the fact of what the movie was and what his character was, because he definitely could have gone off more on that. But yeah, I mean, that's to the other side of the coin. From the way that I view his character in this, the argument can be made from that scene as a counterpoint. It'd be like, okay, well, he wasn't flat in that scene. Like, yeah, no, he wasn't. And if it's the case that my problem
say that he's flat.
With the way that his...
I would say that he's restrained. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I can see that.
I think I froze there
for
a second.
You did, but we jumped in.
Okay, so, yeah. Restrained, fine. But if he was meant, if his character was meant to be portrayed that way, that's fine. It just didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's that. But that scene where I guess he was, you know, more restrained, right before he does that, they show him, and this is what I was going to say when it cut out. Right before that happened, they do a close up of his face and he twitches. And it was almost kind of like, hey, look, here's this real subdued guy right before what's blowing up for him. And you can see in his facial expressions, he snaps.
Yeah.
And then that's when he goes off. Which at the end of the day, I'll just say that the way that they portrayed the character, the way Billy Crystal portrayed this character, it just didn't work for me. That's pretty much just it.
You know, I had a moment in it where I said, I turned to Roman because we're both watching together. I said, I think my favorite part about him is her.
Yeah.
And I think I was supposed to say that. Like, I think like if Nora Ephron had heard me say that, she would be really pumped to hear that. Because I think that's how they're supposed to be. I think they're supposed to balance each other out. And the fact that they both see something so valuable in each other that they're willing to go through all this together is kind of the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my favorite scenes of him have to do with her.
Yeah, like 100%.
This movie made, like, I went from being like, yep, this is what I thought it was. And I'm kind of like, okay, decent line, but whatever. And it wasn't until the scene where he's pacing back and forth behind Meg Ryan while she's trying to read every address before she puts it into the mailbox. And he just gets frustrated to the point where he just grabs it and throws it into the mailbox.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I get it. I see what they're doing. Like, they're showing the little relationship moments that build bonds between people. And they're showing the little things you don't normally see in these movies. And it's like, it's the, it's the, for lack of a better way to say it, it's the little cute moments that no one remembers 5 minutes after.
Well, and the, like he that. Brought those up, like at the very end, where he's like, when he was talking about the things that he loves about her in that big speech. I love that, because you saw that happen in real time. Like, you saw them build that up.
Yeah, and that was the moment that was like, you know, I think I might actually like this movie. And then they started doing more of that, and then that's when I actually started to like it. This movie ended with me enjoying it, as opposed to like, oh my god, this is all wrapped around one question. But what I like in this movie is it drove home a point that I feel like most people in long-term relationships knows that it's true, and it's the key building block to a long-term relationship, and that is, it needs to be a friendship. The person you're with needs to be your best friend. And this movie shows that that for these two people, the trajectory this storyline took them on was the only way that was going to happen between these two, was that they needed to build that friendship first. Mm-hmm. That was the only way that these two personalities were going to work together.
Yeah, and I think that plays into the title of the film. Like, yes, they meet in the first 5 minutes of the movie, but like the rest of it is like the whole movie is like building to that realization that they want to be together.
Agreed. And I like that. I don't know. I never actually thought deeply about the When Harry Met Sally part of it all, but they do kind of keep meeting, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And I love the thing, like, and I think that's one of the things that kind of pulled me in. It was pretty quick, was that they keep meeting each other under different circumstances. At first, you know, he's in a relationship and she's single. Then, you know, she's in a relationship and he's getting married. And I love, like, that they, like, not consciously, but they will kind of check in with each other, like, kind of periodically.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, that airport moving walkway conversation that Billy Crystal has with her doesn't make her mace him in the face immediately was totally fine, and then it was okay for the next check-in.
Sorry, I got distracted there for a minute because my computer just kept giving me notifications that something was plugging in and unplugging from my computer. I couldn't figure out what it was, so I had to go in and mute the notification. So if you're watching live and heard that, I am sorry. But it appears that my external hard drive that I have all the graphics on for this is just unplugged. So that's fun. We talked a lot about Billy Crystal. We haven't talked much about Meg Ryan.
Man, she's perfect. Yeah. I don't know what else to say. She's awesome.
Like watching this movie, it's completely believable that even somebody who doesn't believe that, it's very easy to see how somebody falls in love with Meg Ryan in this, because her character is perfect.
I love that. I mean, Billy Crystal was right, and he brought this up, or his character brought this up, where he's like, nothing affects you, does it? Nothing does. And then that moment where she calls him crying, you kind of break a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you went, oh, there she goes. And then you know she's in a relationship at that point, but she doesn't call that person. She calls him. And like, it really, I don't know. She's so good. She's so good at it. I mean, I think, that's all I got, man. She's like perfect in this movie. I like her in this better than the other one.
Then You've Got Mail?
Yes. Okay.
We haven't talked about the scene yet. Devin, what was your introduction to the scene? Because you said that's all you knew about this movie. What do you know that from? The scene, for anyone watching or listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, is the I'll Have What She's Having scene in Katz's Diner.
All right, so whenever I was living out in Los Angeles, I do the studio tours, right? And that's just what you do when you're out there. And one of the studio tours, wherever this was made, this is like the big scene they show. Like, as a, you know, this was Columbia Pictures at the time, which is Paramount now, or then, which is Sony now?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the trajectory? Yes. So at the beginning of every studio tour, they go like, you know, Sony Studios, where movies are born. And then they show you, like, a clip of all of them. And they, like, showed the When Harry Met Sally clip in full on, like, this diner scene. And I think that's probably the first place I've seen it.
Okay. It's one of those iconic scenes that it gets referenced in everything. And the scene has come up recently because there was a tribute to Billy Crystal at the Kennedy Center. Billy Crystal was one of the Kennedy Center honors recipients at the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. It was Billy Crystal, Renee Fleming, Barry Gibb, Queen Latifah, and Dionne Warwick. But Billy Crystal's segment at the ceremony, which, if you don't know, is a huge ceremony in Washington, D.C. The president comes, a bunch of past recipients of the awards come out. They had a lot of people speak for Billy Crystal, and these are just the few that I saw clips of. Robert De Niro came out and talked about Billy Crystal because of their work on Analyze This and Analyze That. Whoopi Goldberg came out and talked about their work with Comedy Relief and paid tribute to Robin Williams, who could not be there, the late, great Robin Williams. And then Rob Reiner came out and talked about this scene. They recreated the diner behind Rob Reiner, and then they had Meg Ryan come out. And Meg Ryan gave a speech about that scene. Rob Reiner actually said that Billy Crystal came up with that line, and it's recited by Rob Reiner's mother. So that's Rob Reiner's mother in the diner who says, "I'll have what she's having." Meg Ryan came out and said, "That scene came really naturally to me. I really have Billy to thank for that. I've never actually been around anyone who made faking an orgasm easier. So thank you, Billy." Even a million years later, When Harry Met Sally is still at the top of everyone's list when people talk about their favorite rom-coms. For why that movie is still so resonant, Ryan praised director Rob Reiner's brilliant direction, Nora Ephron's perfect script, and Mark Scheinman's fantastic musical score. And then there's the chemistry. Chemistry is, well, no one really knows what it is, but Harry and Sally had it. And all I know is that acting with Billy was effortless and the characters just came alive. And just meeting him, I don't know how you could not love Billy Crystal.
I mean, she's so right.
Yeah.
So I was wondering then, where does this movie sit on your guys' favorite rom-coms list? Is this top, like Meg
Top
Ryan
10.
Said? Top 10?
Yeah.
Ryan?
I don't really know where to put it.
No?
Because...
Don't forget to take out your trash cans.
I'm going to have to turn that off every Wednesday.
For some of the audience, they'll get this. Might be a little upset about it. To be honest, if I had the choice, rom-coms. I've never really thought about a rom-coms list. But if I had a choice between like this or Runaway Bride, which I know is not like that actress's top rom-com either, I'd probably still end up watching Runaway Bride.
Really?
Yeah. Like I like this now. So now that I've watched the whole thing, but I still have like a large first chunk of the movie that I'm not about. Like not because it's bad, just because I'm just kind of like clunking along as of the storyline.
I'm just going through a list of top rom-coms here, and I gotta say, this one might be my number one.
Really?
I think it is. I think especially of the ones that we've watched on this podcast, I think this is my number one. I had a lot of fun with this one, and I think that this is one that I would go back to.
Okay.
Like if someone's like, watch a, okay, Princess Bride doesn't count.
No.
All right. It made it's it fantasy. Is number 14 on this list. Yeah, it's fantasy. If someone's like, Devin, pick a peer rom-com for me, I think I'm picking this one, to be honest.
Okay. Like I said, this is probably top 10. If I can come up with a list of 10, this is definitely in it. but
we have to do this now. We need to come up with
our
10.
Valentine's Day is next month, so That's we haven't done doing, a list episode in a while, so I feel like we should do that again.
Yes.
So one of you said you had comments on the end of the film.
Yes, okay. It's me.
What are your thoughts? Are you talking?
So the question that's
are you talking about the final like interview with them or? Okay.
No, I'm talking about that they end up together at okay. all. Because basically, when you meet them, the first thing that happens is Billy Crystal goes, men and women can't be friends. They'll, you know, sex will get in the way. Men and women can't be friends. Then the movie proceeded to show us that men and women can, in fact, be friends. They are great friends. They're awesome friends. Then the movie goes, just kidding. Men and women can't be friends. And then has them connect. And I was trying to think if there was another man and woman friend in this movie that would make the movie land on the men and women can be friends side of it, but it doesn't. It just means that men and women can't be friends because sex does get in the way, and that Billy Crystal in the beginning was ultimately right. Am I right in that interpretation of it?
I don't think you're wrong, but I don't think you're right. I think it's somewhere in the middle. Okay. I feel like the movie is saying you can be friends, but don't let your denial of feel like don't be in denial about your true feelings.
And then if you genuinely are just friends, that's just fine. Okay. Cause that's okay. That's totally fine. Or is the movie saying you just can't be friends with Meg Ryan?
So like, this movie doesn't take a stance because it wants you to make up your own mind on
you think
it.
So?
Because at the end of the day, that's what it falls on. This movie can take a stance one way or the other, and half the people who see it aren't going to agree with it, because you are going to have people, men or women, whatever, who look at this and go, "Yeah, no, I could never." And then, you know, you'll have others who are like, yeah, no, I have like five, you know, women who are friends or something. So, I mean, like, this is what I meant before at the very beginning, where it's like, this movie is a perfect example of like, this is what happens that people unintentionally make life more difficult than it has to be when they think of these ridiculous rules that they think are universal when they're not.
Yeah.
And all right. And that's what I feel like Billy's character learns in the 12 years between meeting Sally for the first time and eventually confronting her at the New Year's Eve party. Where it's, he kind of realizes that, like, this stupid rule he had when he was younger that he was trying to follow, it doesn't last. Well, doesn't last. It doesn't work in reality.
Devin, where are you on the standpoint of can men and women be friends?
I have a lot of female friends. I think we can definitely be friends and just friends. I think it's weird to think otherwise.
I do too.
What about you?
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, Ryan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so then it got me thinking, and I have one if you guys don't, but do you have any like weird rules that you guys heard someone say that you're like, that's not going to hold up to any kind of scrutiny in life? Because like men and women can't be friends, that's just a rule. And while you're thinking of one, if you might have one, have one. I heard someone go one time, as a rule, I always go to bed early because nothing good happens after midnight. And I went, what?
You're friends with Ted Mosby?
Guys, I mean, I wasn't, because it's past midnight now and this is still happening, so clearly good stuff's happening.
I mean, the only other thing I've heard that's even that like kind of runs into that is if you find yourself pulling $400 out of an ATM at 3 a.m, usually it's not for anything good.
All right, it's fair. I've never done that.
That's not my answer to this, but it just made me think of that.
The strangest thing that I've ever heard, and this isn't really like a life tip or like rule, but just like a travel one. Like if you need to stop somewhere, it's on the wrong side of the road, you just keep going. They don't try to cross the highway.
Fair. Yeah. I always stop. I cross.
I was in the Boy Scouts, so I heard some really weird things, and I don't really know what to pick for this. So I don't really know.
You just gesture broadly to the whole Boy Scouts manual, and you just go see this.
Just all of the weird things I heard from, like, in not the manual. I'm talking about from the individual people in it.
I was like, in Cub Scouts for a while, and it kind of attracted people that had very strict life rules of.
Well, not even strict, just weird. I mean, I'm talking like I knew a kid that recited the whole like early to bed, early to rise, and whatever the like end of that saying is. He would say that every morning, or like every night. So I'm talking like that level of like I've heard a ton of different things like that throughout my life, and I just tend to ignore them.
Did you run into that guy later at an airport?
And then later again
at a party? No, it'll happen. Don't worry.
All right,
Devin.
So I have one more thing before we wrap this up. I hope you guys have been practicing because now we're going to do our best fake orgasm on camera.
No, yes, let's do it.
We're not going
to. I have
been. Bye.
No, we're not going to do that. I think that does it for When Harry Met Sally. I'm glad to hear that you like this, Devin.
I did. Very much
I feel
so.
Like I know what the next rom-com is going to be, and it's going to be something very different from what we've done so far on the show.
Is it Phantom Thread?
Yes. No, it's not the Phantom Thread.
Good.
Although I would love to see a rom-com with Daniel Day-Lewis as the male lead.
Who doesn't, man? He is
or
so tricky.
No, I'll do you one better. A romantic comedy with Daniel Day-Lewis as the quirky best friend. Like, have him be the Carrie Fisher role.
I want his role from There Would Be Blood as the quirky best friend.
You drink his milkshake.
Oh, he's so good.
That does it for this week's episode. Next week it is Ryan's pick to pick a movie that one like Devin and I had never seen. Ryan, what is your pick?
I am picking The Ritual.
The Ritual. Okay.
I've never heard of it.
Did I say that right? Did I pronounce Ritual? That right?
Yeah. Yeah. It.
Although if I the say Ritual. It again, it's gonna just start sounding like sounds and not an actual word.
So. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this week's You Have to Watch This podcast. Thanks for joining us live on Wednesday nights, where I have to remember to turn off my Alexa so it doesn't go off in the middle of the show again. We'll be going live on Wednesdays for the foreseeable future because I had some stuff come up with work that I will not be available on every Tuesday. So we're just going to stick to Wednesdays. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, where you can also see us live if you're out and about on the go. We will be going live there from now on as well, as long as it doesn't crap out my computer like it did tonight. you can also listen to You Have to Watch This podcast on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon. So if you have an Alexa that likes to go off in the middle of your podcast, you can listen to us there. But just don't listen to us while you're podcasting. That's a little bit redundant. Until next time, for You Have to Watch This, I'm Alan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Devin.
And I'll have what he's having.
That would make for a very awkward scene. You had to be you.